KPCW News Time now, 8:09. Good morning. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'm scheduled to talk with a couple of folks from UDOT. Jeff Dupay is the senior project manager with UDOT Region 3, and Jeremy Bone is the project manager for the Heber Valley Environmental Impact Statement Project. We'll be talking to them about last week's meeting and the public input process and studying that needs to be done to determine the future of US 40 through Heber Valley. Later on, I'll be talking with the author and a member of the Summit County Clubhouse, Rick Kilpak, about his newly published booklet, Bipolar Booklet. Finally, Utah Avalanche forecaster Craig Gordon, and I believe author Ed Power, discussing a new book highlighting the world of avalanche professionals. Well, tomorrow, September 1st, is the deadline for most of the existing businesses and tenants to be moved out of the five-acre site planned as Park City New Art and Culture District. Rick Bruff reports the deadline is the beginning of several important steps for the city's development of the site.
Park City Deputy City Manager David Everett said that all of the occupants in the district area, bounded by Kearns Boulevard and Bonanza Drive, got their notice 6 months ago. He said most of them will be moved out by the 1st. They have allowed a few occupants until November 1st to move out.
The September 1st businesses are a bunch of small businesses like Sleta Construction, Thomas Eddington, Panic Button Media are a few of those tenants. And then looks like Silver King, we're going to work with them to have them stay on site for a couple more months. Anaya's is closing their location there September 1st. The couple of the nonprofits that are in, I think what's called the, you know, informally the clinic building, they've got a couple more months because they are finishing up their structure for their new location.
Everett said he doesn't know exactly where the popular grocery store Anaya's is moving to, but he understands it found a location in the Snyderville Basin. Ultimately, he said none of the businesses or other operations are being forced to close. He said the city has prepared a master plan development application for the district of over 200 pages, and they're looking to submit it to the Planning Commission in early September. They've had meetings and open houses on the project. The details can be found at the city website, imaginepcarts.org.
It really is the vision that has come out of this long process that includes housing, it includes transit facilities, it includes a very large set of spaces for arts and culture work for people to do. It includes a really cool plaza area that's protected by the surrounding buildings and a significant food hall area and an open space that we hope to see a lot of people visiting over time.
Everett said the application deals mostly with what's being planned by the city.
It certainly has more detail about the city's facilities because we're a little further along in terms of the design, the schematics for those buildings specifically, which are, you know, the majority of the buildings on the campus. While, the Sundance, the vision for the Sundance, I think, piece of it and for Kimball's is coming along. They're not quite as far along in schematics as the city is.
But that's leaving out the plans for the district's two major tenants, the Kimball Arts Center and the Sundance Institute. We asked if the city's plan would be affected if something happens to those two major players.
Well, we live in an uncertain world, no matter what. But at the same time, we have to keep planning and moving forward. Going through the MPD process doesn't commit anyone to construction. It certainly helps us move forward and help to clarify what opportunities and challenges we're going to have on the site, right? Like, I mean, I can expect the Planning Commission and the Planning Department to say, well, you know, we think that you need less parking or you need more parking or, you know, we need to really evaluate your building height, make sure that what you're proposing works. So we're not committing necessarily to construction with this process, but we are taking steps toward it so that when we are ready, we can move into that phase without having to wait another 6 to 12 months while we go through this process.
Everett estimated the cost for the city's portion of the district would be $60 to $80 million. He said the source for that is the transient room tax. That funding has obviously been affected by the coronavirus outbreak and is still a question mark as the winter tourist season approaches. He said the city is staying within the three-story scale for its buildings and isn't looking for a height exception, though there may be some additional housing in the middle of the district that increases the height a few feet. Turning off Kearns Boulevard, the city plans show four major buildings west of Bonanza with some alleys to break up the mess. Everett said one building is the food hall and also the entrance to their underground garage. Two others will be mixed-use structures, including studios. The building at the corner of Bonanza and Munchkin will be a transit hall and welcome center. Everett said demolition of the current buildings could take place in September and October, but will probably be closer to November. For KPCW, I'm Rick Brough.
It's 8:17. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, UDOT is taking input from the public until September 26 on the proposed Heber Valley Parkway. On the phone with details, I have Jeff Dupay. He's the Senior Project Manager for UDOT Region 3, along with Jeremy Bone. He is the Project Manager for the Environmental Impact Statement Project. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Morning. Thank you.
Let's see. So UDOT, again, taking public input from the public until September 26. And I don't know who wants to start. That input must be done through procedural channels. Can you tell us how that works and then identify you so I can find out who's talking?
Jeremy, let's have you go first.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, this is Jeremy Bound. And so we have a number of different ways in which people can give us their input and their comments on this project, one of which is email. Our email address is hebervalleyeis@utah.gov. You can visit our project website, hebervalleyeis.utah.udot.gov. We also have a Facebook that you can look up, the Heber Valley Corridor Environmental Impact Statement Facebook group. And then there's also a phone number, which is 801-210-0498. And as always, you can email or you can do regular mail to the department. I guess if you really wanted that, the address for our region is 658 North, 1500 West in Orem, Utah, 84057. So many ways in which people can get their comments to us for this project.
Okay, so last Thursday's meeting, what was that about? Just to kind of kick off this process?
Yeah, it was an opportunity for us to kick off this process and this project, introduce it to the public. Give information of what we know so far, what we've found so far, and it was an opportunity for us to start to solicit for that feedback, get the word out that we want some input from the public.
So what kind of input are you looking for? I mean, we don't even have an alignment, do we?
No, at this point there's no alignment. The type of input that we're looking for is we are working on trying to understand what the transportation needs in the Heber Valley are. So we're in what we call the scoping phase of a project. So we're trying to understand what the issues, what the concerns are, and then we'll move into looking for the solutions, but first we have to understand the problem.
Yeah. So I guess, I mean, are you in the midst of an environmental, because you keep using the words EIS, I mean, the environmental impact study. Why do one of these if we don't even know where it's going?
Well, Jeremy, I'll take that. This is Jeff Dupay. So one of the things you have to do at the beginning of any environmental process like this is you have to, it's called the issues identification phase. And so what you need to do is you have to be able to identify current conditions, any types of issues that we need to be aware of, so that once we start determining alternatives, we have all that background information so we can make better informed decisions as we move forward into that deeper environmental analysis. So it's really, it's that first step, but it's an important step as you go along this decision-making process.
So the idea behind this is to take the trucks off of Main Street, and that's, of course, US 40, or is that to push the cars onto this new road? and keep
that,
the trucks
that
on?
That is a great question. And really, again, this is Jeremy Bound. Really, the answer to that is we are looking to solve the transportation issues that exist. And currently, we don't have any alternatives selected. We are aware that Wasatch County and Heber City have both been planning for a bypass, they call it, around the city to help take traffic off of Main Street. But right now, this project has no alternatives, no predetermined solutions. We are simply still working on scoping and understanding what the issues are. And there could be many different solutions for us to look at.
Okay. So, again, we don't know what that who's leaving US 40 at this point, whether it's the cars or the trucks. And I guess since US 40 is a state highway, what about this new bypass or this parkway? Is that also a new state road, or is it a county road?
Again, that is a great question, and yet to be determined. Those sort of details are questions that we'll work on answering when we go through the alternative analysis phase, if a bypass is one of the proposed solutions as we move forward with this project.
So when people talk about this being a done deal, it's not a done. You haven't even decided if a bypass is needed?
This is
Jeff, Leslie. That's correct. There's no decisions have been made at this point. We understand that there's a feeling and a sentiment out there that we're just going through the motions, but that's really not the case. No decisions have been made. We're still in this initial phase. While other studies and other things have been in motion previous, in order to be fair and objective to this decision-making process, we've got to come in without any preconceived notions, so that we get the right information, so that we can make those right decisions that will benefit the community for the long term.
Okay. So after this this first scoping process is done, is that when we start to make some decisions whether or not this project, bypass project, should go forward?
Yeah, so our next step here is to develop what we call the purpose and need, defining what the problem is and our goals and objectives to solve that problem. And then after that, we would go into alternative development. And then you compare those alternatives to the purpose and need to work towards what the final solution will be. And then when we come up with a final solution, we call that our preferred alternative.
Okay. And I think from Thursday's meeting, some people wanted to know if things can be done now to make Heber's Main Street, US 40, safer for pedestrians and cyclists. Is UDOT involved in those improvements?
Yes. Yeah. Like you mentioned before, US 40 is is a highway that's owned and managed by the state. And so any improvements to that, UDOT would definitely be involved in. And so that's a great question, and that's something that we will work on.
Yeah.
So Leslie, this is Jeff again. So, you know, because it's a state, it's a state-operated roadway, you know, if there are interim improvements, safety improvements, things like that, those can still move forward. This study doesn't shut everything down. What it does is it acknowledges that while other things may be happening along the corridor, this process will still go forward. So you can be working on these short-term interim solutions along the corridor itself, while you're taking that longer-term view as to what's needed in the future, 20 years down the road.
So what are some of those things that UDOT could do? I think some of the suggestions were better timing on the lights and actually dedicated left-hand turn signals, so people don't have to, you know, turn, make that left in front of a truck or something.
Yes, those are two suggestions that were made during our meeting last Thursday, and so those are a couple things that we'll look into internally and have some conversations on, as well as coordination with the city and other groups here in UDOT on looking into what things we can do to improve. We haven't had a lot of time since last Thursday to start moving forward with any of those things yet, but those are some conversations that we can start having.
Okay. And we know at this point, I mean, just given all of the development that's been approved by Heber City and Midway and Wasatch County, that it's just going to get busier, yeah?
Yes. It is projected to get much, much busier. The projections that we've been looking at show that the population close to doubles by 2050, which is the horizon year or the date that we're looking for into the future that we're trying to make sure we're solving problems for.
Yeah. Okay. So for now, again, people have, again, you mentioned those four different ways or so, the email, Facebook, website, phone call to find out more about the project, but also to give input, and they have until now and the 26th. And then what happens after the 26th? You'll compile that and then what, come back to the community?
Yes. So after the 26th, we'll take all the comments that have been submitted, and we'll go through them, and we'll create a report and compile responses to the comments. Some comments will be grouped together, right? Like comments will be grouped together with a single response, and we'll be able to publish that information on our website for people to go and see what information we received and how we're planning on using it. And like I mentioned before, since we're kind of in this scoping process, some of the key comments that we're looking for is what are goals, what are visions that people have for their community into the future, so that can help us kind of start to shape that purpose and need that we're going to have to develop.
Okay. And it seems like we've been talking about this bypass, I mean, at least here on KPCW for years now. There has been a route that was planned by Wasatch County and Heber City, and property has been purchased to accommodate that. At what point, though, would UDOT get involved in actually helping to purchase property or even condemning property if it was needed?
Great question. So as we move through this project, if it's determined that that's the course of action that we need to take is following the alignment that's kind of been set aside or set up by Wasatch County and Heber City, if it's determined that that's the course of action we should take, UDOT would likely start to get involved at that point with helping with property acquisition.
Okay, Jeff, Jeremy, anything else you wanted to mention?
So this is
yeah,
Jeff.
One of the things with this process is that
because of COVID-19.
Hang on, you guys both talking. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. You go ahead, Jeff. I didn't hear you.
Yeah, that's not a problem. So with COVID-19, we've had to make some changes in how we engage the public. So we didn't have an in-person public meeting. We had an online public meeting. So it's really important that we, if those who couldn't attend the online public meeting and they have online capability, to go in and go to the website and review the meeting, they can hear everything that was discussed, the comments that were made. And then what that does is that allows us to get that information. If they weren't able to participate or they don't have those types of online resources, we really and strongly encourage them to call us. Call the project team at that 1-801-210-0498 number and contact the project team so we can get that information out to them and get them engaged in the process and collect their comments, because that's really helpful in our decision making process.
Okay. Did you want to add one more, Jeremy?
No. That's basically exactly what I was going to get to as well. Thank
okay.
you.
All right, you guys, Jeff Dupay is the Senior Project Manager with UDOT Region 3. Jeremy Bone, the UDOT Project Manager for the Heber Valley Environmental Impact Statement. Thanks so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it. 8:32 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Rick Kilpak has just published the bipolar book, Beyond the Diagnosis of Severe Mental Illness. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. So your book is just about 40 pages, but chock full of information. Tell us what you've done here.
Well, I've got about 30 years of experience in this area. I was diagnosed with bipolar in 1988. So it's short. It's an easy read, but there's 30 years of information that I've experienced with bipolar, depression, and anxiety that could really be of service and be a contribution right now, especially with the pandemic and all the unknowns that are currently happening in our society.
Okay. So is it something you've been thinking about for a while? I mean, how long have you been working on it?
Well, I actually started working on it last October. And what happened was I started attending the Summit County Clubhouse, and I saw a lot of caring, thoughtful people making their contribution there, assisting people with mental health issues. And I really wanted to become part of the contribution and making my contribution in the area that I have a lot of experience in. And so that's when I really started putting it together. So in October, I started working with a lady by the name of Casey Clifton, who she and I worked at Whole Foods Market together. And we started putting the book together little by little, and putting in the graphics and the pictures and everything else that goes with the book and the cover. And by February, I had it up on Amazon. So that was the process. I had a lot of help along the way.
Wow, that's great. And then your experience, I mean, we've heard about people, you know, who have come down with bipolar. Something triggers, medication or just an illness or something. Was yours something like that? Was it?
Well, what bipolar truly is a genetic issue, and it is triggered by stress and what they call a chemical imbalance. But what I really believe a chemical imbalance is a vitamin and mineral deficiency. So it's really important that we eat properly, take our supplements like magnesium and zinc and our fish oil, avocado oil, all the different things that are really healthy for our brain, because our brain is 75% fat. So we need good, healthy oils and good, healthy fat to feed our brain and the different minerals that it needs.
Yeah. And one of the one of the chapters, and you start with it, is the importance of a good night's sleep. I mean, that's important for everyone. Why, especially for somebody with a bipolar condition?
Well, this is a key red flag for me. And so everyone really needs 7 to 9 hours of sleep on a nightly basis. But if I don't sleep properly and I go 2 to 3 nights without sleeping well or not at all, I know I'm on the high side of manic depression. And so the mania part of it is the scariest part for everyone else around the person suffering with bipolar. But truly, you can download a free chapter of my book at AmericanMoodSwing.com and read about the elements that I mentioned about sleep and the importance of sleep. And I add about 13 different things that you can add to your nightly routine that will help you sleep. Whether it's, I currently take a magnesium supplement called Calm. I use lavender oil underneath my nostrils at times. And so there's just simple different things you can do to get a great night's sleep, including keeping your window cracked open so you can get that fresh, cool mountain air coming in your window. Makes a big difference on how you sleep.
Right. And you also note about movement, exercise, which is important. And another chapter is on connection and relationships. And as you mentioned, you're a member of the Summit County Clubhouse. How is that important in healthy, being mentally healthy?
Well, the importance of friendship and the connection I have at Summit County Clubhouse makes a huge difference, because not only do I have support there looking for transitional work or just a more of a family feel of people that really care about me. And Amber and Phyllis, Amber McKay is our executive director, and Phyllis know mental health. They know if someone's out of their scope of norm of their behavior, whether they're rushed speech or they're acting differently, or, you know, they're there to assist our community, and they can really make, and they do make a huge difference for me and anyone having mental health issues, or even if you're not having an issue at the moment, they can support you. And it's just a great sense of community there. And I do want to thank Sally and Max and Barbara and Lynn out at Summit County Clubhouse. They're our board of directors, and they're just doing a wonderful job for Summit County.
Yeah. And you guys recently moved. I think you're out on Rasmussen Road now from I think you were at the Christian Center at one point. How's that working out, the new location?
We have a wonderful location at Rasmussen Road, but the good news is we actually have another home that we are looking to move into, which is really going to be an amazing asset to the Summit County Clubhouse. But right now we have a wonderful office too. The other newer one that's actually a house is going to really serve the community in a way that is just going to be a great asset for our county. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit more about that. I mean, because something that's certainly, you have the executive director there, but it's the members who actually determine what the clubhouse is going to do. What are you guys working on?
Well, we have our daily chores. Like, we'll have our 1 o'clock meeting and line up what we're going to do for the next following day and who's going to be in charge of what. So it gives us a sense of productivity and work and responsibility. We have computers set up so we can, you know, search the internet for jobs. And so, you know, between the camaraderie, the picnics, the meetings we have, the daily lunches we serve, all those things create a sense of community. And the bigger picture is these people really care about you, and they definitely make a huge difference, and they have structure, and there's a list of standards that we have standards. So we know what our expectations are. So this is all new. There's like over 300 clubhouses around the world, and this has been in our community here in Park City for just about a year. We just celebrated our year anniversary last week. And so this is going to continue to grow. It's an outreach for people with mental health issues that are transitioning back into work, and they do a super job. So I'm very pleased to be a part of it. And like I said, it helped me focus on how I was going to be my contribution in putting this booklet into form, and then also being a peer specialist and an advocate for other people that might be suffering with depression and anxiety. There's so much of it going on right now. All the helplines are 400 and 500% up from last year. So there's a lot of situational things going on with the pandemic that they can be of service to, and I can too. And that's why we're here. We're here to service and be our contribution.
Well, that's great. So back to your book. Again, you said that people can download a chapter. How do they do that?
They go to AmericanMoodSwing.com. That'll be a landing page. You can download a free chapter, which is definitely talks about the importance of sleep. And then they can get the whole book in either Kindle format, or they can get the soft print version. And the hardcover will be coming out in another couple of weeks. And then I'll have an Audible recording digital format also they can download by the end of the year.
Oh, wow. So did you self-publish it then?
Yes, I did self-publish.
Yeah, great. Okay. Again, people can purchase it then right from the website.
Right from the website. Actually, the website at AmericanMoodSwing.com is a landing page. And when you click on one of the links, it'll take you to Amazon. And at Amazon, you can download it off Kindle or order the print version.
Okay. Hey, anything else you'd like to tell us about the booklet?
No, I'm just really grateful to be a part of Summit County Clubhouse and having the booklet out. And one last thing I'd like to share with people, the best, fastest way that I shift my state into a good mood is gratitude. Being grateful and having gratitude makes everything enough and opens you up to having more things come into your life that you can be grateful for. So as much as I've been through the fire, I've been through a lot of hard times, I'm on the other side of it, and I know how to create a healthy, balanced life after being diagnosed with mental illness, and it's there for everyone. A diagnosis does not mean the end of your life. It means that you're going to go through a transition, and you're going to learn how to balance it and manage it, and eventually be absolutely fine and thrive and make a difference for yourself and others.
Well, congratulations on that and on the booklet, Rick. Rick Kilpak, again,
thank you very much.
You can find out more by going to AmericanMoodSwing.com. Well, it was moving day on Friday for a handful of tenants who have called 1685 Bonanza Drive Work. This nondescript building with its brick pillars and green siding has housed dozens of businesses over the last many years. It's being demolished this fall to make way for Park City's new Arts and Culture District. Here's this report. All that remains in the building at 1685 Bonanza Drive, besides the deep imprints in the worn carpet, is a stray printer, some drinking glasses, a few dead houseplants, and some very heavy furniture. The tenants at the building range from newcomer Thomas Eddington to Robbie and Carol Sletta, who have operated their construction company out of the second floor in one of the suites for almost 30 years. Sletta remembers when the building was built by contractor Skip Scherf and his wife Zizi operated Mountainland's design upstairs. The town's hardware store took up the first floor before it later became No Place Like Home, White Pine Touring, and more recently, Switchback Sports.
The reason we liked it so much when we first moved in is because Stock Building was just down the street, and it was easy for construction. Robbie could just swing into Stock, pick up what he needed, and go to the jobs. But that's all changed.
For Katie Eldridge of Panic Button Media, a tenant for the last 13 years, while the building is pretty dumpy, it was always improved by its great location and co-tenants.
It's been such a great place to be productive, to have a central location, to have great office neighbors, and it's really been great. I mean, we are a bit like family.
She's not the only one who feels that way.
I'm going to miss everyone who worked upstairs. I mean, we had quite the family up there.
The most recent tenant of 1685 Bonanza is Thomas Eddington when he moved his business, Integrated Planning and Design, there almost 3 years ago. He says he knew what he was in for.
I think we're all sad about moving. We certainly are sad about moving, but also, you know, we recognize this was a short-term solution, was always going to be redeveloped, so looking forward to the next phase of this area of the city.
Eldridge brought out a bottle of champagne to celebrate the end of an era and also the end of 1685 Bonanza.
No one here is bitter. The city has been great communicating with us, and we're excited for the future. And definitely, me personally, the Arts and Culture District is close to my heart. But I think maybe we thought this was happening a little bit later, and it's happening now, and the day has come, and we're moving out.
Three, even four of the tenants will be enjoying each other's company again as they move to another older building just down the street at 1901 Prospector Avenue.
End of an era. Happy Friday.
Well, for the past 3 years, Utah Avalanche forecaster Craig Gordon has been working with author Ed Power to create a book highlighting the world of avalanche professionals, recreationalist technology, and the aftermath of avalanche accidents. The book is finished. On the phone to talk more about it, I have Craig Gordon and Ed Power. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, morning, you bet. Leslie, thanks for having us.
Okay. Hopefully you can hear each other. It didn't seem to be working earlier. But the book is titled Dragons and the Snow and the Snow Avalanche Detectives and the Race to Beat Death in the Mountains. When is it getting released, Ed?
The official publication date is tomorrow, September 1st. And the book is being published by Mountaineers Books, which is headquartered in Seattle.
Okay. So how did you hook up then with Craig Gordon to put the, you know, to write the book?
Yeah, I had a 35-year media career. I was a newspaper reporter, editor, and publisher. And my wife and I built a home here in the Ogden Valley in 2004. We're avid skiers, and our sons are snowboarders. And in January 2016, we moved here full time, and I was struck right away in the mornings how much avalanche bombing was going off across the valley at Snow Basin Ski Resort and behind us up at Powder Mountain. And I became interested in wondering about who these people were that were doing this work and what their lives were like. And I decided it was important for me to take a course in avalanche awareness since I was going to be up in the mountains so much. And I signed up for a course, and Craig was teaching it. And anyone who knows Craig, he's kind of a larger-than-life guy, and we hit it off. And I told him I was looking for some writing projects. I wanted to go back to my original love of writing, and decided it was a great opportunity to do this book.
So the book is about what? I mean, is it about the characters in the avalanche, forecasting, or is it specific stories that you tell?
Well, it's a broad look at the subject. The book starts out with an accident that happened in the Uinta Range that Craig ended up investigating, and it tells, in the first few chapters, it tells the story of that accident and what went wrong, and introduces the reader to some of the techniques that Craig and his colleagues use to investigate avalanches. It takes a look at the science of snow and snowpack and how that all plays into the picture. It looks at the lives of avalanche forecasters and the kind of work that they do, and again, the kind of schedules they lead, which are waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning to post avalanche advisories, that kind of thing. And tells some other stories of accidents, some of which resulted in fortunate rescues and some of which resulted in deaths. And it's really pretty much a broad overview of both the dramatic stories of things that happen in the mountains, but also the science and the psychology even of risk-taking in the backcountry.
So, Craig, that's where you kind of helped out then with the providing the science of the snow and snowpack and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ed and I made this really remarkable connection, and kind of using that conduit of avalanche education, snow science, and then helping Ed connect with the right people and players in the industry, as well as folks who are, you know, deeply associated who have been associated with avalanche accidents, avalanche rescue, and, you know, in some cases, some real tragedies. So I helped connect Ed with the right people, the right names, and then he has done a beautiful, beautiful job at crafting many stories throughout the course of the book, and really revealing the greater public to people who are involved not only in forecasting and technology in avalanche rescue, but also boots on the ground people, everyday people, people in our own community right here in Utah who are deeply involved with saving lives.
Yeah. So did he come out into the backcountry with you to kind of see for himself?
A little bit.
Yeah, so as Ed alluded, you know, we met up at a snow basin hosted Backcountry 101. So that's a 3-hour evening followed by a all day on the snow. And so Ed was part of that and then got to follow me around a little bit. We've skied together. We've spent some time together. So he's been able to get into this culture and this vibe and get a good feel and a good finger on the pulse of the people who are involved. And I think one of the common threads that brought Ed and I together is not the frozen water, the snow aspect, but we realized that we're both kindred spirits in the water and the surf aspect of this. There were a lot of common grounds that initially helped kind of bring us together. And then, again, Ed has just beautifully word-crafted this book to show the public, you know, there is a lot of heart, a lot of soul, and a lot of hard work from the women and men in this industry that helped to save lives.
Yeah, so Ed, you wanted to talk a little bit about your experience going out in the backcountry, getting up at 3 a.m.?
Well, I'd say up front, I'm not an avalanche expert. That takes beyond the scholarship that I had to engage in to learn about all this, as a good reporter would do with any subject. You know, I have gone snowcat skiing 4 or 5 times in the backcountry. I've gone heli skiing a couple of times, and I've done a lot of riding in the side country, as they call it, around ski resorts. But yes, I had to become a student of all this. But you know, it takes a lot of expertise and both a lot of time and effort in the backcountry to truly learn avalanche awareness and be able to understand and see signs of avalanche and snow. So, yeah, I've spent enough time to know what an incredibly beautiful place it could be. And I've also spent enough time to know that it can be a very hazardous place, and you need to take it seriously when you go out into the backcountry.
So the book gets released tomorrow. It'll be what, in bookstores or online or how?
Well, it's Mountaineers Books, which is the website is mountaineers.org, obviously is selling it. And then all the major online sites, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. And yes, we're expecting that some of the Salt Lake area bookstores, which we've been in touch with, will also be carrying the book.
Okay. The link, you do have it online already. People can pre-order it, but are they going to wait another 24 hours? Just due to COVID, of course, any book tours planned, or you just can't do that kind of stuff anymore?
Well, it's interesting that you asked, because we're actually going to have a virtual book launch this Thursday evening. It's going to be at 7 p.m. Salt Lake City time, and the launch will come from the downtown Trolley Square retail store of Black Diamond Equipment. They've been gracious enough to host us there, and Craig and I will be delivering a presentation, which is free, and people just need to go to mountaineers.org and get the Zoom link so that they can participate in the virtual book launch. But Craig and I have worked hard on a great presentation and a script for it. And so we definitely invite people to dial in and participate.
Okay, great. Hey, Craig, well, I got you on the phone. You've probably have heard, of course, with the announcement about how different skiing is going to look like at our resorts due to the pandemic. Kind of a lot of talk now. It's like, I'm going backcountry. I'm not making a reservation. Are you guys kind of gearing up for what could be a very unusual year in the backcountry?
Yeah, gosh, that is a great question. And, of course, things are going to look a lot different right now with the COVID that has, intersected this life that we knew and that we know. And yes, absolutely, Leslie, we are totally gearing up with the expectation that the backcountry will be busier than ever. So a couple things that we do know is that winter, well, it always happens, and it always happens here in Utah. And, we saw last year when the resorts did close down and people just sort of spread and flocked onto public lands and, rode during a time where, quite frankly, the avalanche hazard, even though we did have new snow, led to multiple close calls, near misses, fortunately no fatalities, because the last thing we want to do is stress out any of our overtaxed either healthcare system or the workers or the rescuers. So being super cognizant moving forward, first thing folks need to think about is not triggering an avalanche at all. So avalanche avoidance is going to be the ticket. Next, you got to have all the rescue gear, but if you need to use it, it means that you've screwed up. And then also, you need to have some avalanche awareness and education under your belt. Take one of our free basic avalanche awareness classes. Those are going to look a lot different as well this year. And we're still kind of figuring out that platform, but most likely those will be a virtual type of situation. And then finally, we always have lots of options, even though the resort scene is going to look a little bit different. This is a year to really exercise some patience, tamper down some of that stoke. Let's just see where we get as we navigate through some new waters here. And definitely, as we move forward, we've got a couple of cool events. First is going to be our annual UAC 27th annual fundraiser. That's September 10th. People can go to utahavalanchecenter.org.
for more information and how to host a party. And then we've got a really cool event. It's a bit of a refresher, but it also might be some new information to people. Our 13th annual Utah Snow and Avalanche Workshop will also have a virtual platform that is going to be held in the second week of November, 10th, 11th, 12th, and those times are going to be from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. So you can get all things Avalanche at your one-stop shop for you for all things Avalanche. That's UtahAvalancheCenter.org, and definitely tune into our September 3rd book launch, because that's going to reveal a lot of the characters and the people that are involved in this industry, and it kind of get the stoke level going and get us starting to think about the snow and avalanche season that's just right around the corner.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, congratulations, Ed, on the new book, and Craig, thank you for your time this morning as well.
Thanks for having us.
We appreciate it, and as Craig mentioned, there may be more activity in the backcountry this winter, and Dragons in the Snow, Avalanche Detectives, and the Race to Beat Death in the Mountains may be an opportune moment to read the book and learn more about it.
Okay, appreciate your time. Park City Planning Commission got a thorough look at the proposed development at the base of Park City Mountain Resort at their meeting last week. The development would greatly expand some lodging options at the resort. The public hearing focused on potentially replacing the original Park City Mountain Resort master plan study concept with a new one that is more modern and reflects the current and future needs of the base area. The area to be developed is the north end of the resort's base area and would replace the current surface level parking lots with affordable and employee housing, condos, a hotel, and retail space. Parking would still be at the base area. It would just be moved underground also to beneath the development, as well as parking structures. The development of the current parking lots has been approved for years. The original 98 site plan also included proposals to build on the parking lots, but the 10 acres under option to the Provo Base PEG development kickstarted the project into high gear, and the public got its first look at the project earlier this year. The four parcels to be developed, called parcels B, C, D, and E, are in the plans, would wrap around the current base area as well as the Shadow Ridge and Silver King buildings. PEG hopes to break ground on Parcel B, which is the current lot between Shadow Ridge Road and Manor Way, next spring. Construction will be done in phases, and the current schedule lists a project completion date of January 2026, barring any setbacks. KPTW News Time now, 9 o'clock.